As Unitarian Universalists, we find wisdom and inspiration in many places. Jewish and Christian scriptures and other sacred texts, the arts, science, nature, our own experiences. Our tradition keeps us open to revelation from many sources. Today's wisdom comes from six of the world's traditions, and I did my best to Google the correct pronunciation of everything last night. No promises. From the Dhammapada, do as you would want done to you. From the Tao Te Ching, the Tao of heaven is to take from those who have too much and give to those who do not have enough. From the Quran, whatever you bestow in charity must go to parents and to kinsfolk, to the orphans and to the destitute, and to the traveler in need. From the New Testament, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. From the Midrash to Psalm 118. When you were asked in the world to come, what was your work? And you answer, I fed the hungry. You will be told, this is the gates of the Lord. Enter into it. You have fed the hungry. From the Tatiriya Apashanad, let him never turn away a stranger from his house. That is the rule. Therefore, a man should by all means acquire much food, for good people say to the stranger, there is food ready for him.
Hey, everybody. So, approaching religion as I do, which is from outside any of the main religious structures, occasionally I'm struck by a simple question that is often quite impossible to answer simply. I then bring them here, and you allow me to share my searches for answers and the odd places that I find myself when I do that research. So in my current job, I help the City of Madison's Food Policy Coordinator. Now, years ago, this position was actually an alcohol policy coordinator. It was started because we have about 30,000 undergraduates who may, in fact, be drinking alcohol that come here every 9 months. So this was to coordinate with that. But about 5 years ago, it became apparent that to the city's administration that there was also a need to understand and champion food policy for Madison residents. And within a year of recognizing that, it became apparent that this was a full-time position. I'm lucky to be able to work with and for our current food policy director, and his work ranges from helping with retail food access to removing food deserts to working on protecting bees and to helping encourage community gardens. The latest project making its way through the city's approval process is to research cross-dock delivery systems. And in simple terms, this would be a building where trucks carrying surplus food can come in and load immediately onto trucks that would take that food to food pantries and food banks, things like that. Because the food is perishable, this is different than a simple warehouse, and it requires a different set of facilities. And then I thought about what we do with the excess food at farmers markets, people from Reeb, and I thought about how almost every community kitchen and food pantry is supported by or sponsored by a religious institution. So I asked, why is that? And that's the simple question. I have an exploration to share, but no simple answers. So my first exploration showed me that the idea of hunger in religion often slides very quickly into metaphor. Especially about spiritual hunger. I checked online, and there are numerous sermons and homilies where the pastor, the minister, or the priest begins with the passage from the book of Matthew, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. and turns it into a call to proselytize a belief system. If you read the remainder of that passage, though, it turns into something more than just giving food to the hungry. The remainder reads, "I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." So the city is working on the nuts and bolts of food delivery, but when we look closer at faith communities involved in these charities, we almost always find a call to something more involved, and I would say more radical. I found that the idea of breaking bread together cuts to the heart of the spiritual impetus to feed the hungry. It ties in with charity, but also with the idea of being present with the person you are helping. You are eating and breaking bread with them. You aren't giving them food and then walking away. The religious passages that Adria read point out that all world religions have feeding and caring as a cornerstone of their purpose. And in Islam, it is even one of the five pillars, one of the very foundations of their faith. So when I looked at Christianity, I found the homily, the parable about the Good Samaritan, to be especially interesting when you understand the full extent of this story. And in the beginning, Jesus is answering questions from people, and according to this translation, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And part of the answer was to treat your neighbor as yourself. And then Jesus goes on with a story about that. And here it is. A certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who both stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. By chance, a certain priest was going down that way. When he saw him, he passed by on the other side. In the same way, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where he was. When he saw him, he was moved with compassion, came to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. He set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the host, and said, "Take care of him. Whatever you spend beyond that, I will repay you when I return." So I think it's useful to hear the entire story, because the simple idea that the parable of the Good Samaritan is about being charitable is complicated by the details. The Samaritan didn't just give the victim money. He carried him, healed him, housed him, and then returned a few days later to check in on him. This is a story about charity, but it is also about sharing in another person's humanity and their needs. I found an article online at whyislam.org which called for an interfaith approach to feeding the hungry across the world. And they note that for Muslims, the fight is fundamental to the faith. It is the essence of zakat, the third pillar. The importance of charity is underscored throughout the Quran. This charity is not only directed toward fellow Muslims. The Quran calls believers to do good to parents, kinsfolk, orphans, those in need, neighbors who are near, neighbors who are strangers, the companion by your side. Charity should be directed broadly, not limited to fellow Muslims. I'm interested in how these passages go beyond simply being charitable. Being charitable to parents is expanded to kinsfolk and orphans. Those in need is described as being neighbors, but that idea is expanded as the passage goes on to refer to strangers as neighbors. And then it circles back to those closest to us. So from family to strangers to the loved one by your side, all these people are our responsibility. In Judaism, the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism explains on their website about Jewish values on fighting hunger. And again, you'll see this dynamic. The Torah and Jewish tradition are explicit in commanding that we feed the hungry. "And when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap all the way to the edges of your field, or gather the gleanings of your harvest, you shall leave them for the poor and the stranger." And the article goes on to say, "The Talmud explains that each Jewish community must establish a public fund to provide food for the hungry, And our sages explain that feeding the hungry is one of our most important responsibilities. And later, God commands us to share our bread with the hungry and bring the homeless into our house. So again, giving food to the hungry becomes more. It encompasses welcoming the needy stranger into your very home. I was searching through tracts in Buddhism about this, and I found something actually back from 2007. North American Buddhist monk, Bhikkhu Bodhi, in Lion's Roar magazine, issued a challenge to Western Buddhists. And part of what he wrote is, "Seeing the immensity of the world's anguish has raised in my mind questions about the future prospects for Buddhism in the West. I've been struck by how seldom the theme of global suffering, the palpable suffering of real human beings, is thematically explored in the Buddhist journals and teachings with which I am acquainted. It seems to me that we Western Buddhists tend to dwell in a cognitive space that defines the first noble truth largely against the background of our middle-class lifestyles. In response to this challenge, a group called Buddhist Global Relief formed, and part of what they did is they have walks to feed the hungry, but then the money that's raised from those walks goes to the local area, but also to their global efforts, which include performing works on long-term solutions to ending poverty and hunger. They've built wells in Cambodia. They have provided deworming medication in Niger, promoted the health benefits of breastfeeding in the Côte d'Ivoire. The group also focuses on promoting women's education and economic power worldwide, which they see as a crucial step in eradicating the inequities that lead to hunger and poverty. And the walks for the hungry are very popular, and they happen across the United States, from small towns in places like Michigan all the way to Los Angeles itself. So feeding the hungry here is an initial reason for developing this aid, but it leads to a range of activities that are interactive. They're not simply feeding people. They are focusing on the root causes of the suffering and the populations that experience them. A walk to feed the hungry becomes relationships that are a deeper part of communities around the world. In Hinduism, I found a series of movies called The Holy Kitchens. And in reading about them, I need to find them, actually. So there's a series of films that have been made under this general title. The filmmakers, Andrew Blackmore Dibben and Vikas Khanna, state, "Feeding people is an essential act of humanity, and as such, every religion has beliefs and rituals associated with food. We make our films to draw people to awareness of this commonality of the world's religious traditions and to illuminate their differences in a way that will engender mutual tolerance and respect. The Holy Kitchen films explore within the context of the world's major religions the manifold spiritual meanings of the communal sharing of food. One of the films in the series focuses on the Sikh community in India and their pledge to feed the hungry. This feeding happens at their golden temple in Amritsar, India. This is the core, the very source of the Sikh community. It is their most holy place. The temple was finished over 200 years ago, and it includes a community kitchen, a langar, L-A-N-G-A-R. Every day, everyone and anyone is invited to eat a meal there. There are no exceptions. All are welcome, and all will be fed." The filmmakers continue and speak about Seva, S-E-V-A, as one of the most important concepts in Hinduism. It means service. When we give of ourselves to the community, we enrich our fellow human beings and share in abundance. Sharing food, according to the Bhagavad Gita, is the highest form of karma. But in practice, this to me is very interesting, this means volunteering time and preparing meals that can be shared with those in need in temples and in India and around the world. When you do something for other people, you affirm them in the most important way possible. You make them part of the human family. Sharing with others forces us to mutually recognize our humanity and creates a powerful bond between people. These bonds spread outward to create the shared identity we call community, and it is within this community that we find the true essence of our lives. Our true existence lies in our experience of family, friends, and community. Through these, we identify ourselves and our place in the world. Now, since I'm not a religious person, I did have to find something in the social sciences to balance this all out a little bit. Caitlin Woolley and Ayelet Fishbach in Psychological Science, the journal Psychological Science, published the results of an experiment they did. The title of their article is Shared Plates, Shared Minds: Consuming from a Shared Plate Promotes Cooperation. And they brought in volunteers and set them up as two different groups of people. There were union representatives and there were business, sort of the managers. And these two groups had to work together to figure out a wage to pay the workers. And what they did in this experiment is they took food and they had like sweet candies and they also had salty like pretzels and crackers and things like that. When the person who played the union representative had one type of food and the person who played the manager had the other, it took them an average of 7.3 rounds of negotiations before they could settle on a wage to pay the workers. When they shared the same food, it only took 3.6 rounds. So literally, eating from the same plate increases cooperation. And in one of the experimenter's words, I think that food really connects people. Food is about bringing something into the body, and to eat the same food suggests that we are both willing to bring the same thing into our bodies. People just feel closer to people who are eating the same food as they do. And then trust, cooperation, these are just consequences of feeling close to someone. So, the next time you see a food pantry or food drive, understand that this is probably a first step, an outward sign of a culture of deeper connections than just people giving to people who need. It is the first step to a deeper encounter between human beings. That's part of why with Stone Soup I asked this time, while they're cooking the food, are they talking? Do they find out each other's names? Because they are finding out who that other person is as a human being. It's not simply a needy person. It is Bob or Joe. So I'll leave you with this section of a writing, a meditation by Francis Moore Lape. This is from Food is Our Most Common Bond. Because food is our most primal need and our common bond to the earth and to each other, it can ground us as we stretch ourselves to draw in all the interlaced threads so we can weave a whole meaningful picture for ourselves. With food as a starting point, we can choose to meet people and to encounter events so powerful that they can jar us out of our ordinary ways of seeing the world and open us to new, uplifting possibilities. Blessed be.